Some recently released data show that more Americans are sick than are healthy, and that is mostly due to the rise in diet-related illnesses. And we're going to talk about what we need to do to make America healthy again with our next guest. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. Beth Olson back with us. She is an associate professor and extension specialist in the Nutritional Science Department at UW-Madison. Her main focus is on nutrition education and healthy infant feeding. So, what questions do you have about your diet? Why do you think Americans eat so much unhealthy food? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Beth Olson, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. It's good to be here, even though it's not with you in person. Hopefully the next time.
Hopefully the next time, for sure. Tell us about the report that shows more Americans are sick than are healthy.
Yes, there were a couple of big things released recently. As I think we've talked about on your show before, the U.S. government puts out the U.S. dietary guidelines. That's to help them guide their own programs in nutrition, but it also helps health professionals and educators give people good nutrition advice. And as a part of that, they gather scientists, experts from around the country to put together a report, and then the federal government uses that report to put out the dietary guidelines. So in that report, which was just turned in, and you can read it online if you're interested, they note that more Americans are unhealthy than healthy. And a big factor they look at where they're making that claim is overweight and obesity, which is almost 3 in 4 of U.S. Citizens or Americans are overweight or obese, but also 1 in 2 have either prediabetes or diabetes. So we really have a lot of disease in our country, which is in part preventable if we had better nutrition, you know, from young ages forward.
Yeah, I was looking at that report. It said that 3 of 4 young people don't qualify for military inclusion because of, I think, typically it was weight.
Yes, and so I think the dietary guidelines and recently the American Society for Nutrition did a white paper on why we should be doing a better job with nutrition research from the federal level. And they note that it isn't just about the disease, it's what does that disease do to our country? We have reduced productivity when people are ill and can't work. They pointed out military readiness. There aren't enough people, young adults, that would qualify to serve in the military. It drives up health care costs, you know, and even as children have developed some of these conditions, which they didn't have previously when we didn't have as much problem with our nutrition and our weight, aren't going to learn as well if they're not able to participate in schooling activities because they're ill.
Yeah. And those diet-related illnesses, which are the ones that are causing us to be unhealthy?
Well, overweight and obesity is one, although personally, I don't like to focus too much on weight because that's just kind of an indicator. It's not really what's going on in the body, but it does set people up often or increase their risk for heart disease, hypertension, cancers. I think we also have to look at things like it when younger people in particular, but also older people, are overweight and they don't feel that they can be active or exercise. That contributes then to poor health outcomes, but they also at times can become self-conscious, and then they don't want to be out and about as much, and that's not good for their mental health either.
And it seems like we spend much more of our research, thinking about research now for a minute, much more of our research money goes to treating disease instead of preventing it, at least
as far as I
can tell.
Yes, you're right. And that's what the American Society for Nutrition report really pointed out, that we our costs, that I think the stat they gave is in the last 50 years, we've gone from 5% to 28% of the federal budget being healthcare spending. So when you think of a third of our budget covering healthcare spending, of course, some of that we need to do. A lot of that's preventive care, but much of it is driven by chronic disease that's diet related. And that is, by one of their estimates, probably about maybe 1,000 times more than they spend on nutrition research itself. So that seems to me quite out of whack.
How has the pandemic helped bring out the nutrition problems we have as a country?
Yes, I think we really saw that. In fact, quite early on, they began to see that patients that were hospitalized for COVID-19 had poorer outcomes if they had underlying health conditions. And a lot of those conditions that they noted were ones that have a relationship to what we eat and how active we are. So overweight and obesity, diabetes, hypertension. So it wasn't always that someone with those diseases was catching the disease more often. It could be that that happened as well. But in particular, once they went into the hospital, they did much poorer. They were much more likely to end up on a ventilator, for instance, much more likely not to recover than people who went in healthier.
Yeah. Healthier, yeah.
Healthier before they, contracted the disease.
Well, you know, we have guidelines. We talk about it often, but you wonder, how do you think we can motivate people to be more concerned about their diet before they get sick?
I know. Isn't that the struggle? I think the Dietary Guidelines Committee that produced the scientific report noted that diets of Americans have not changed much in the last 10 years. And that's despite all of, you know, what you see in the news and all the efforts of the government and of health educators to try to help people. Certainly, I think one thing that in the last few years, for instance, Extension, with whom I work, but also our public health departments, have begun to focus far more on is our total environment. So when you think about how we did this earlier with smoking, I mean, we knew that smoking increased people's risk of cancer, and we told people that, and yet people continued to smoke. And so we made a lot of environmental changes, we said, you know, in businesses and public places, people couldn't smoke anymore. We tax cigarettes. We don't allow advertising. We don't allow children to purchase it. You know, we don't have vending machines of cigarettes now out in the lobbies of restaurants. So we began to change the whole environment. And I think in nutrition, that's something we just have to work more on doing.
Oh.
It's overwhelming, isn't it?
Well, I'm wondering where do you even start for something like that?
Well, I think one thing we've advocated for as nutritionists and other people working in public health is to do policy changes in schools and in neighborhoods. So trying hard to provide healthy food environments in schools as well as education, but also trying to get into many neighborhoods better access to higher quality foods, more fruits and vegetables, whole grains in the places where they shop. Also to bring in things like farmers markets to locations where they usually haven't been, to try in our programs where we provide support to people, to low-income families and families with children, to provide them with more vouchers, for instance, for fruits and vegetables and whole grains. And then I think some places are beginning to do it on their own as well. Healthcare systems is one where they started to take, you know, soda out of the vending machines. Schools are another where they've begun to say we're not going to have vending machines with candy available, you know, in our schools. So those are the kind of things we're started on, but I think it's going to take a lot more work.
That's for sure. I'm pretty sure it's going to take a lot more work. Well, policy changes. We can talk some more about that with our guest today, Beth Olson. And you can join in too, by the way. A number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. What should we be doing to help people eat better? What do you do to improve your own diet. There are lots of things to talk about here, and I hope you'll join in. Beth, by the way, is an associate professor and extension specialist in the nutritional science department at UW-Madison, specializing in nutrition education and healthy infant feeding. And certainly you can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm going to take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Beth Olson. She'll be with us right up till 12:30. So you stay with us. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about why so many folks don't change their diet until they get sick and what should be done about it with our guest. Beth Olson is an associate professor and extension specialist in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. So what would you like to know about eating better? What is stopping you from changing your diet? Give a call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Beth, some callers online, I think we can just go to the phones and to Sally in Kenosha first. Hi, Sally. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. Interesting show, because I want to know, where does she stand on the idea that I read a book that enlightened me to the truth about the food manufacturers and even the FDA and what was really going on for years and years about the sugar and the white flour that was keeping us fat, and we didn't know it, but there were people that did know it. And so I read this book by Dr. Hyman, Mark Hyman, and I went from 226 to 170 very easily, and I've maintained a size 14 for going on 4 years now. And it's was because I was getting the truth about the food that we're eating, how really unhealthy it is, and the pyramid being all wrong. And, you know, so I guess I'm wondering about, where does she stand about the truth? Even with doctors, I mean, from what I read, I mean, it's been a whole very bad situation of a lot of untruths for many decades. And they actually knew about these kind of things back in the early 1900s. But a woman that brought it to the attention of others, because she was a woman back then, they weren't listened to. And so there's a thing of, I guess I'm wondering, where does she stand with that and in her position, with that kind of knowledge and getting that kind of truth out to people?
All right. Well, Beth, comment on Sally's comments.
Yeah. Well, first, congratulations on her ability to choose different foods and become healthier. That's wonderful. I think as nutritionists, one thing is we no longer have the food pyramid. The dietary guidelines are represented by a graphic to help with teaching, because, of course, the dietary guidelines was a booklet with lots of words. But how did we portray that information to the public? And it was done with a graphic. The pyramid is an older one. Now we use My Plate. And if you go and look, you can go to Choose My Plate online.gov. They have a plate, and it is, make half your grains whole is one message. Half your plate is fruits and vegetables. So what we've been trying to communicate in really for quite some time now, but more recently than, you know, the turn of the century, is to try to select as many whole foods as you can, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and fewer of foods which are processed, because sometimes that processing removes things like fiber. That's how you get white bread instead of whole wheat bread, or white rice instead of brown rice. And with that, you can also lose some nutrients, some good vitamins and minerals, which are important. I think also with a diet that has more whole foods versus processed foods, it tends in general to be bulkier. It has more water. As I mentioned, it has more fiber. And so it tends to fill us up perhaps a bit more better than the processed foods do. And so I think moving that direction, and that is more also a bit the way the Choose My Plate is laid out, can be more plant-based than some of us have had. You know, a lot of people have grown up where your piece of meat for dinner was kind of the center of your plate, and then the fruits and vegetables maybe were off on the side. And now we're saying make more plant foods more centered in your diet and use your higher fat foods or your animal products, meats, that kind of thing, a little more sparingly, which can also help keep your calorie count down and help with your weight. And then all those little those other nutrients that come along are great in terms of reducing your risk for a lot of chronic diseases.
Yeah. Larry in Eau Claire has something that just relates to what you were just talking about. Larry, hello.
Hi. Thank you for having me on your show.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, she sort of answered it. I think that new food plate or whatever, I think they're saying meat and dairy are sort of non-essential. And I agree with her. Whole food, plant-based diet, like the China study or Forks Over Knives movie and this kind of thing, I think that's the way our nutrition should be going. You can, heart disease, coronary artery disease, all this stuff is basically animal produced. And that's basically all I wanted to say and hear her viewpoint on that.
All right. Thank you for calling, Larry. Beth, comment.
Yeah, thanks for that question. I want to clarify, I was not talking about animal products as not being something that would be healthy to use. They're still a part of Choose My Plate. They're still a part of the dietary guidelines. One reason that many people would use animal products is they're an excellent, for instance, meat and eggs and milk are an excellent source of protein, and it's very high quality protein. So that can be a reason that one would want to choose it, along with just preference. You know, I think this past weekend, you know, we had brats one night because that's a tradition growing up of having brats around holidays or sporting events. And as long as we keep that in balance, I think they can be a healthy choice. Some people choose not to use them at all, some types of vegetarians, and they have to be a bit more careful in how they put together foods to get enough protein and other nutrients. But the U.S. dietary guidelines, when they come out, you'll notice they give food patterns for people to look at. One of them includes meat, one is for vegetarians, and one is something called the Mediterranean diet, which has been quite popular, which just has some other foods contributing a bit more. So we like to say everything can fit. We just want to be careful that we're choosing things in moderation and choosing within each food group the widest variety that's available to you.
A listener in Lake Mills emailed that the schools are not allowing kids to have salt. They can't even bring their own, and wonders, isn't that a bit extreme?
Oh, that's interesting. I have not heard that. The U.S. dietary guidelines, again, are to inform all the programming that we do in nutrition, which would include things like school breakfast and school lunch. I do not know how schools would address food brought from home, but within that would be likely moves to reduce sodium in the foods that are provided, for instance, through school breakfast and school lunch. Being that Americans tend to eat a lot of salt, and for some people, that can increase their risk of high blood pressure. We don't always know how those who those people are, and That is one disease which often people don't realize they have before they, you know, go to a doctor and find out. And so trying to kind of bring the sodium down in our food supply has been one way to try to increase the health of our population overall.
Let's go to Liz in Dodgeville next. Hi, Liz. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. I am a recently retired primary care provider. And one thing that I try to do with every annual exam is ask people, you know, what are they actually eating? What is a day like? What kind of exercise or activity? And that's super important. And we had the benefit of a free preventative health exam because of the Affordable Care Act, but that takes time. Secondly, people should get a fasting blood sugar annually to see where they stand. And we need insurance companies to start to cover referrals to nutritionists if people are found to have prediabetes. So if you have a fasting blood sugar between 100 and 125, that's prediabetes, and you can really turn things around before you ever progress to diabetes. But many insurance companies won't cover those visits unless you've actually gone on to get full-blown diabetes. I would also say that I think providers should focus not on weight, but actually on healthy eating, because that's much more important. And maybe pick a few things. My top thing was always to try and get people to stop drinking soda or sugar drinks. There's a lot of confusion about beverages. People thought they were doing good by having energy drinks or Gatorade, in fact, when those are also higher sugar. And also I would say trying to get schools to help young people be part of growing and preparing food. You know, Madison has a lot of great programs for that. And also not blaming people who are overweight. We now know that if a mother is obese or a father, they can pass along changes to their offspring, which makes it much harder for some people to lose weight. And finally, I wouldn't bring the treats home. We're all going to have treats, but it's extremely unfair to your brain to expect that if you have Cheetos or ice cream at home, you're going to pick the apple instead of that, but rather go out for the treat. So those are my suggestions. And a final one, which we all do, and I need to do better too, is something that I called interactive TV viewing. So if you're watching TV, you're part of the show, you don't need to have expensive exercise equipment. You can stand up and walk in place and do a few things. So those are kind of my tips after many decades in practice.
Well, Liz, thank you so much for calling. Beth, comments?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, all wonderful suggestions. And I think she's bringing up what we've been talking about in recent years is not isolating one thing like weight or even blood pressure or physical activity, but looking at our lifestyle as a whole. They're all very related. One thing affects the other. And so to take one part of our lifestyle and only focus on that may ignore things that might be equally or more important to do, perhaps even easier to do to start with. And so I think the dietary guidelines points that out, that there are many other factors that are important. I think earlier this in this spring, when people began to ask me, well, what should I do to try to reduce my risk for getting COVID-19, I just took a look at all the information on our immune system. And, you know, it really also there talks about a lifestyle, that our immune system is stronger not only when we eat well and we exercise, but also when we get enough sleep, if we don't smoke or consume too much alcohol, if we can, and I know this is very hard right now, reduce our stress level. And so many of those things go together. Often becoming a little bit more active, just deciding, you know, every night after dinner, I'm going to take the dog for a walk. Now you've become a bit more active, but maybe that also helps reduce your stress and makes you feel happy to be with, you know, out in nature perhaps, or in your neighborhood, and maybe you wave at a neighbor. So these things tend to go together and build up, and all of them together can really help us be more healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that question and comment. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@WPR.org. Beth, you mentioned the new The dietary guidelines, and the new dietary guidelines will be coming out, I think, by the end of the year. What changes do you think they will have?
Well, we can see a few things that the committee recommended. It is up to the government to use that report along with other input that they get from agencies to actually come up with the dietary guidelines. But something that was completely new this time, often they don't change a lot, but this was completely new, is that they did look at information related to women who were pregnant and children up to the age of 2. Prior to this, the dietary guidelines only applied to people who were 2 years and older. And, you know, related to what the last caller brought up about children, one of the things they noted was it's so important for us to reach young women who will become perhaps pregnant and breastfeeding women, and those children 0 to 2, that a lot of things that happen in that time period will set someone up to have a healthier lifestyle later, both for the nutrition that they get, if their pregnant mom eats well, for instance, or is able to breastfeed, also for the nutrition they get between the ages of 0 and 2, but also because those habits begin to be formed very early. So if we can introduce a healthy lifestyle to the youngest among us, and then keep it going, toddlerhood and childhood, it's more likely they will keep those kind of habits up as they grow and become more independent.
Yeah.
So that was a big difference. And two, I think the note she also brought up about alcohol, a big change they did make was reducing the amount of alcohol that they would say someone who does drink should consume in a day for men. So they've always said on a day that you drink, men should consume no more than 2 drinks, women 1. So this is on the days you drink. This isn't an average. And that women, they reduce that so that now they say men as well should have 1 drink a day on the days they drink or less. They express that we are seeing more binge drinking and high alcohol use. And I don't know if anybody has documented it during COVID, but I think that was a concern that the stress of COVID would have people drinking more. And so the alcohol itself, particularly in binge drinking, can have, you know, terrible effects. It's not good for your body, but also, you know, it can have effects related to things like drinking and driving or falls. One of your callers or your guest before was talking about falls prevention. So heavy alcohol use in older adults has been associated with more likelihood of falling. But also we can start to crowd out other good nutrition out of our diet if we're replacing too many of our calories with alcohol.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm wondering about the research. You know, I started by mentioning some of the new research out, and one of the things interesting to me was who does the research at the government level? We have the CDC, the NIH, National Institutes of Health, I think, is involved. One of the big research units, and USDA was another one. How much coordination is there in that?
That's a great question, Larry. And in fact, that was one of the topics, or the main topic, that the American Society for Nutrition was addressing in their white paper, that we do have a lot of research funded by NIH. That's the National Institute of Health. They're the biggest funder of research in general, including nutrition research. But nutrition research is actually a very small amount of what they fund. USDA also funds even fewer dollars, and it isn't well coordinated. Not only is it not coordinated across these research areas, it's not coordinated with our own programs. So USDA not only funds nutrition research, they fund nutrition education and programs that help people who need food assistance. They would participate in those programs. It's been recommended for a number of years and just has never come to be, to put together a standing, ongoing unit or office or some other form of function to coordinate across all these nutrition efforts so that we can leverage them, so that they're not isolated, so that we can, across these units, for instance, looking at how we eat, but then there's others looking at cancer prevention. Well, let's put the two together and try to get a better coordinated nutrition program that would indeed cover us from, you know, cradle to grave, but also look at things like our food supply and how we're affected by advertising and how policies do make a difference. I think that the American Society for Nutrition made a good case that doing that would get more out of the dollars we already spend, much, you know, and then they would love to see, as would I, more money put into actually researching in this. Again, given that the payoff down the road for Americans and for our country could be tremendous.
Yeah. So what advice do you have for listeners who would like to be more proactive with their diets?
So I think even though the dietary guidelines, you know, are changing over time, I think there's some basic tenets they've had for a long time, which maybe because we have them for so long, they start to get boring. So I think we gravitate towards the new study we saw on what we should or shouldn't eat, or the new diet plan, or the new way to prevent some disease by this special kind of food. Whereas the best evidence I see is for a whole diet, which includes a lot of whole foods and foods where you get a lot of variety. And so, for instance, you know, we talked in the past about protein, and a lot of people ate meat. And recently we've begun to say, look at what other foods have protein. So within your protein choices every day, even there, choose a lot of variety. Choose legumes and beans and nuts and plant combinations. And if you're using animal products, eggs and milk and meat, so that it isn't all concentrated in one food form. I think people get the idea of a variety with fruits and vegetables, and we've talked about lots of colors and how that gives you more variety. But I think thinking, how much variety can I get within each of these groups? And then how whole can I make my food? So more whole foods, fewer processed foods. And just like I'm not saying don't eat meat, I'm not saying don't eat processed foods. There's a lot of foods that are fortified, which help tremendously with some nutrients that are hard for some of us to get. And there's foods that make making our meals easier and faster and more convenient. And I think there's a good need for those. We just want to make sure that we keep that variety going.
Well, Beth, it's always a pleasure. I want to thank you again for joining us, and I hope you'll be back and be with us again. Thank you.
Oh, me too. Thank you, Larry. It was nice to talk to you today.
Beth Olson, a PhD and associate professor and extension specialist in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. Great to have her with us, and we'll have her back. Tomorrow at 11, we'll learn about the latest Wisconsin area to be designated as a wetland of international importance. And Darren Bush joins us as well to talk about paddling. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.